You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves, and we are more than a week into September and beyond excited to actually begin talking projected win totals and over-unders. We're actually, within about 3 weeks of media day and training camp. And so all of these over-under projections are seeming a little bit more realistic now as we're getting a bit closer and rosters are all but set at this point. To help me on our trip around the league today, I have with me Kyle Daugherty, a buddy of mine and an unofficial NBA expert. He'll give us his eye test-based look at each team's win total and whether he'd take the over the under were he to be placing a bet on these teams. And I will also give my opinion. We'll go through the additions and subtractions for each team, if there's coaching changes, what other factors we think will play into their ultimate win total by the end of the season, be able to give our expert opinion on where each team will end up this year. The process for these over-under podcasts will be to go by division. We're going to start with the team in each division with the lowest projected win total to the highest. And of course, we're going to start in the Western Conference and go division by division. So roughly each podcast will be one full division. We'll go through each of the five teams. And from there, I guess you can go ahead and piece together what each of our division standings we're projecting for the end of the season, although we're not going to be making any playoff predictions officially at this point. Today, we're going to start in the Southwest Division, and we're going to go ahead and get right into it. The team with the lowest mark win total-wise in that division is the Memphis Grizzlies at 27.5 wins. The Grizzlies this offseason changed coaches. They have hired Taylor Jenkins to be their head coach. They also signed Tyus Jones, old friend Tyus Jones, Minnesota native, former Timberwolf Tyus Jones, to a three-year $26.4 million deal as a restricted free agent. And he's expected to be their backup. They also, the other significant addition that they made was Ja Morant in the draft with the second overall pick. They also drafted Brandon Clark, who a lot of Timberwolves fans thought the Wolves could be angling for. He was the 21st overall pick in the first round. And then via trade, they added Jay Crowder, Miles Plumlee, Josh Jackson, the former high lottery pick with the Phoenix Suns, Grayson Allen from the Utah Jazz. They recently bought out Dwight Howard. As everybody knows, he's now joined the Los Angeles Lakers. Andre Iguodala is still on the roster, but many expect him to be bought out, although as of today, he is still on the roster. And, you know, added a few draft picks for the future as well. Last year, they went 33-49, did not make the playoffs. So there isn't, you know, it's tough to say what those expectations are this year. You may remember they also have Jonas Valanciunas who they acquired in the Marc Gasol trade. So they have a solid front court. And again, Vegas has put their over-under win total line at 27.5 wins for this year after winning 33 last year. So without further ado, we're going to get into the Grizzlies. What do you think, Kyle, for their potential win total this year?
So I think overall the Grizzlies had a really good offseason, but that doesn't necessarily translate to wins in such a tough Western Conference this year. I think a lot of the things they did this offseason are going to yield a lot of good things in the future, but as of right now, I'd be sitting under for the Grizzlies. I just don't see a lot of those win totals coming in the Western Conference. There's not going to be as many teams that are tanking in the Western Conference as has been in the last couple of years. I see the Western Conference being 10 to 12 teams deep, looking to make the playoffs. So I just don't see them making that run to going over that over.
I actually think I think that you made a good point. The best argument for them being under is that somebody has to lose games in the Western Conference, and the Western Conference got better. If you look at the teams in the conference, it's hard to say that there's anybody that's clearly worse than them. Maybe not to spoil too much of the rest of our podcast, but maybe the Phoenix Suns, maybe the Thunder if they trade Chris Paul, but there aren't very many other teams that are clearly worse. And so that's a fair argument. I tend to think that their front court will be good enough with Valanciunas and Jackson as well. Well, actually both Jacksons, Jaren Jackson and Josh Jackson, that they will make a run at that total. I'm going to say that they're over, but only slightly. I think my overall projection for them is going to be in the upper 20s wins, maybe 28, 29 wins. I think that front court's good enough, and Tyus Jones is good enough as a guy who's going to split minutes with a lottery pick, that they're going to be slightly over and maybe be a little bit better than people think that they might be. this year. But
I think just how much time they had with Conley and Gasol last year, those players were still on the team for the majority of the time last year, that I just I still don't see their ability to make up for that leadership that's lost in the locker room. I know Taylor Jenkins comes from the Milwaukee system under Budenholzer, so I think he's going to be bringing a lot of good culture stuff to the Grizz. But I just I can't see that they're able to make up the leadership that they lost from the old grit and grind teams.
Fair enough. And again, somebody's got to lose games in the West, and it wouldn't be shocking to see the Grizzlies be even worse than they were last year after losing some of those guys. You might remember Memphis had a hot start to the year last year, and people thought they could even be a playoff team after a really good, I think, October, November, and then kind of fell apart, and then weren't any better after they traded their best players midway through the season. And obviously, like you mentioned, Conley's no longer there either. So we'll go ahead and put Kyle for the under and myself for the over, move on to the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans, their over-under this year is actually 39 wins, which has to be, I don't know if anybody keeps track of this stuff, but that's got to be close to a record for a team who had the top pick in the draft and landed Zion Williamson, obviously, this year. But that's an incredible over-under for a team that was expected to really kind of fall apart after not having Anthony Davis, or after Anthony Davis moving on, I guess. So again, that total is 39 wins, and that puts them actually fourth out of the five teams in that division, which goes to show just how strong the Western Conference is expected to be, as well as the Southwest division. In terms of their offseason, the Pelicans did acquire Derek Favors from Utah. They acquired Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram in the Anthony Davis trade, as well as Josh Hart. J.J. Redick was signed in the offseason, a little bit of a surprise signing there. Zion Williamson, we already mentioned, would be the key young addition. And so far, the offseason for them has looked really impressive, given where they were at, where everybody expected them to be at, with Anthony Davis requesting to move on. They didn't really lose anybody else of significance outside of Julius Randle leaving in free agency, and obviously Anthony Davis, and then Solomon Hill was traded to Atlanta. It appears to be, I guess my take on the Pelicans is they're probably going to be in the same neighborhood as the Timberwolves in terms of upper 30s wins, and have a shot to make a run at the playoffs. Last season they won 33 games a year ago, actually the same total as the Grizzlies, who we just talked about. And last season Anthony Davis played in just 56 games for the team. And they won 33 games. And I guess what do you see, Kyle, in terms of this season for the Pelicans?
So once again, as you mentioned, Ben, they're another off-season darling. I can't imagine anybody doing a better job from an executive standpoint than David Griffin did with the situation that he kind of walked into in New Orleans. He took on what could have been one of the most volatile situations in the NBA, and made out like a bandit. I think it'll be really interesting to see the three guys coming over from the Lakers and Ball, Ingram, and Hart, just to see what they're able to do in a I wouldn't call New Orleans a dumpster fire anymore, the way that the Lakers were last year. So I'm really curious to see how they perform. Obviously Zion Williamson has to stay healthy. He's got an amazing ceiling and has the opportunity to be a kind of a once in a generation star in the way that he's built and in the way that he plays. But he's got to stay healthy and stay in shape. And I know that'll be a constant storyline as we enter preseason and go through the season. But I would right now I'm going to put them over. I think they have a better ceiling than the Mavericks. Just because I think some of the stuff that they have going for them with David Griffin building a really great team there, the pieces they've added, and then I think J.J. Redick brings a lot of experience to that locker room to help out.
I think their over-under is actually pretty on the nose at 39 wins. I think my opinion would be that nobody ever really knows what to expect from rookies, even from the ones that are expected to be transcendent. Such as Zion Williamson, but we just don't know exactly how his game is going to translate to the NBA as a rookie. Obviously, they still have Jrue Holiday, and so that, you know, he's a guy that's been an all-star. And as you mentioned, adding Redick is important. Brandon Ingram is somebody who still has some of that upside and is going to be looking to prove something, as he'll be a restricted free agent next summer. And then also Derek Favors. So they do have an impressive front court rotation. I think outside of Redick and Holiday, the backcourt leaves a little bit to be desired, and the wing is actually my main concern, with Brandon Ingram and JJ Redick kind of being the only guys that are really solid contributors, and Ingram not being super consistent himself, Redick obviously getting older. I'm going to go ahead and also give the Pelicans an under, but just slightly. Again, I think the 39 wins is really close. I think they're going to be in the 36 to 38 range. I just think it's so hard to peg what a team that's going to be so reliant on a rookie in Zion and in a young and consistent player still in Brandon Ingram, that I'm just not sure that they're going to be able to challenge for the playoffs, unless the obvious, you know, a difference maker there would be if Zion Williamson comes in ready to go and is immediately a star from day one, then this is clearly a playoff team, even in the rough and tumble Western Conference.
Yeah, I think some of the pieces that they've added are going to be really great. And I think, you know, they got a little bit more than what they expected from the two other first-round rookies they drafted in Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jackson Hayes. I think they're going to provide some good depth off the bench. I think one of the things that I think is going to be underrated for this team is just going to be the excitement level in New Orleans and what they're going to be bringing on a nightly basis. If you can just imagine them going from, you know, such a terrible situation and being kind of drugged through the gutter by a superstar last year to being kind of just having so much optimism, I think that's got some value there for a couple wins to bring them through for the over.
All right, next up for us is the Dallas Mavericks, who their win total for next year is projected at 41 wins by Las Vegas. Last season, the Mavericks also won 33 games, this is our third straight team that had a 33-win year last year. They did not make the playoffs. Dirk Nowitzki retired. The team added DeLon Wright in a trade with Memphis. They added Boban Marjanovic and Seth Curry. They also will get Kristaps Porzingis back. Well, he actually has never played a game for the Mavericks, but he'll be coming back off his ACL injury that he suffered with the Knicks the year prior to last. And we'll be joining Luka Doncic. So clearly everything that the Mavs do this year is going to revolve around that duo. You know, looking at the rest of their roster, you know, there isn't all that much else to write home about. So whether or not you think they're going to reach the over for, you know, 41 wins is highly dependent on what you think of Doncic and Porzingis, both individually and as a pair, and how you think Porzingis can come back from his injury, as well as how Doncic can perform in his second year in the league. So again, with a projected total of 41 wins, what's your take on the Mavs?
I'm going to go under here for the Mavs. I don't have any confidence in Porzingis staying on the floor. Coming off an ACL the first year with a guy his size is going to be really tough, and I think it's going to be too much of a load that they're going to have to face throughout the year. I think the biggest storyline for me throughout the Mavericks season is going to be able to watch Boban without Tobias Harris. It'll be the first time that they've not played together over the last 3 years, and so I'll be curious to see what he's able to do without his partner in crime there. I really think that they're going to go under with this. I think putting so much on Luka, even though he played so well last year, the entire season, I just don't think that they have the ability to compete in the Western Conference. And I'd put them under, and I don't see them making the playoffs as they move into this next season.
Yeah, I think the Mavs are one of those teams where the casual eye test, a lot of times, you know, people get excited to see Porzingis and Doncic together. They both play a fun brand of basketball, and Doncic was electric last year. And then also the projection models love Porzingis and Doncic as well. So I think it's very popular for folks to be thinking of the over here, but I tend to agree with you on the under. I think the Western Conference is going to be really, really difficult. We all know that. And while the Mavs have a deep team, I just think that they're going to end up relying too much on guys that have, again, similar to what I said about the Pelicans, too many question marks. We don't know exactly what Porzingis is going to look like. And not that his game necessarily requires him to do anything crazy in his first year back on a off of an ACL injury. But look at some of the other players that are in the rotation that have question marks surrounding them, whether it be Tim Hardaway Jr., who's a solid player, but obviously overpaid. Seth Curry, who is a very good player, but has his own limitations. Courtney Lee, who's going to be, I don't have his age in front of me, but he's not young anymore. 33. Yeah, so it is. And you know, guys like Justin Jackson, you know, they have some guys who are really solid in limited minutes, like a Dwight Powell or a Maxi Kleber. So I think it'll be another good team and another slight under for me. If their win totals at 41, I put them in the high 30s, maybe 40 wins. But you know, if I had to pick one, I'm going to go under on the Mavs and say that they're going to just barely miss the playoffs. That's not to say that in a couple of years they're not going to be you know, a force to be reckoned with, especially if they are able to do something in the offseason. They should be able to free up a little bit of cap space. And while they haven't had much luck signing guys in free agency of late, you know, they should have another chance to make a run at it next year.
I think another thing to keep in mind is coaching and front office for them. Obviously, they're going to be wanting to be making the playoffs because they gave up those first round picks for Porzingis to the Knicks, and so they're going to want to be doing whatever they can to stay away from being in the lottery and keeping those picks away from them. Also, Rick Carlisle is an unbelievable coach and has proven to get the most out of his team. So I agree with you. I think they'll be close to the 41, but I don't see this team staying healthy enough to breach to go over that.
That's fair. It does seem like health is going to, it always plays a big part for everybody, but for a team like the Mavs, that's going to be a big thing as well. They had a bunch of injury issues last year, too. Next up in the Southwest Division is the San Antonio Spurs. Last season, the Spurs won 48 games in the first year of DeMar DeRozan on the team. They lost in the first round of the playoffs last season. This year, they didn't really lose much in the offseason, although they did lose Davis Bertans, excuse me, and he was a darling of many of the advanced metrics and projection stat models. So that is significant. They added Damari Carroll, Trey Lyles in free agency, and then had a number of draft picks, including Keldon Johnson at the end of the first round. In terms of the Spurs, their over-under for this season lands at 46.5 after winning 48 games last season, not getting significantly worse in terms of their roster. It's tough to say. This is always a tough one for me. When I've considered over-unders in the past, it's always hard to bet against Greg Popovich. He always seems to outperform whatever the projection is, whatever the floor is supposed to be for his team. And so it's hard to say, to look at the Spurs and ever say that they're going to be worse than, you know, the floor or worse than the average projection, even because of the quality of the coaching. But with their win total at 46.5 headed into the season, are you going to go over or under, Kyle?
I'm going to go slightly over. I think the points you made about Popovich are key. I think as we've seen in FIBA this summer, he's having so much fun coaching. There's nothing lost there for him in regards to his excitement to be coaching every game. I think he is the key to it. I just never know what to do with the Spurs because they kind of just are always there. And I see the pieces that they've added, I don't think are key to their success, but I think Popovich and what he's done with Aldridge and DeRozan over the last couple of years are going to be really key to keeping them relevant in the Western Conference conversation.
I'm actually going to go under on the Spurs, as much as I just said that I would never go under on Greg Popovich. I think I need to. I think 46.5 is a little bit aggressive for them. I don't think that they, how do I say this? So I think that they'll be under, I think that they'll still be a playoff team, but just barely. I think they're probably in that 7-9 seed range in the Western Conference. I'm going to say that they're probably going to win in the low 40s. Just looking at some of the, as I said, they didn't get a lot worse, but I think they did have a little bit of good luck last year. And I would be surprised to see, the win in the mid to upper 40s when the Western Conference only got better and deeper. The back end of the Western Conference is much better than it was last year even. And I think that the Spurs are going to lose a few games here and there to some of those teams and will still be a force to be reckoned with, probably a playoff team, but I think 46.5 is a little bit much for me.
Some additional thoughts. I think looking at DeJounte Murray coming back from injury this year, Popovich turned Derek White from and also ran point guard into a great starting point guard that almost took him to a playoff win over the Nuggets this past off this past season. So getting Murray back, who I think is significantly more talented than Derek White, but then also Lonnie Walker, who was off injured last year, was a lottery pick 2 years back for them. I think is going to be really huge and an athletic superstar that can do some different things for the Spurs.
All right, fair enough. So you went over on the Spurs, I went under. And that brings us to the team projected to be the number one team in the division once again, and that's the Houston Rockets, who won 53 games last season and had lost in the second round of the playoffs. They had an active offseason, as they usually seem to. They traded Chris Paul to the Oklahoma City Thunder in exchange for Russell Westbrook. They also signed Tyson Chandler and Ben McLemore in free agency. And let's see, what else did they do? They kept Austin Rivers. And I guess the primary change there is the swapping out of point guards in Houston. And there's tons of question marks about how that's going to work out. I think regardless of your thoughts on Russell Westbrook, he's still a good player, a very good player. He's still a star. And James Harden is also still a superstar. The question is whether or not the fit with Westbrook and Harden can be as advantageous as the Paul Harden fit was, and even as good as that was, and as close as they got to the finals 2 years ago, largely due to injury, things just didn't work out quite the way that Daryl Morey had expected. The Rockets have kind of perpetually been knocking on the door of the finals, but haven't actually reached the finals, you know, with Daryl Morey at the helm in the front office. So 53 wins last season, and their over-under this year is going to be at 44.5 wins. What's your take on the Rockets?
So I think to look at them this year is, like you said, it's going to be very interesting to see the how Westbrook and Harden play together this having those two in the backcourt is going to be a sight to see on most nights. I think it'll allow them to kind of both kind of be in and out, maybe give some more rest to one or the other depending on the nights, and one can carry the load. I would disagree that I think the Paul Harden thing worked out exactly like Daryl Morey wanted it to. They were just an over 20 plus streak in threes away from not only beating the Warriors but probably winning the NBA championship that year. I see them taking a step back, not in regards to talent or what that might be, but I think it's going to be mostly to the top of the Western Conference just being so strong and them having to work through the struggles of what Westbrook and Harden can be. I think Westbrook is a very different player than Chris Paul in regards to his activity on defense. Chris Paul was always active on that side, so I see him taking a step back there. And obviously, Chris Paul is a significantly better three-point shooter than Westbrook. So I'm gonna be watching them on most nights on League Pass, but it'll be really curious to see. But I'll take the under for now.
This is another one that I think is really close. I think Westbrook sometimes can be underrated by some of the advanced metrics. I think he's still a really solid player, although I think it's a downgrade from Chris Paul. And I think that it'll take a minute, just like it did initially with Paul and Harden, for the Rockets to figure things out. I think the 54.5 is pretty much on the nose. I'm going to take a slight over. I agree that they're going to stumble a little bit with how deep the Western Conference is, just like some of the other teams. But I think the star power of Harden and Westbrook and the solid additions around them is going to be enough to get them just a little bit over that hump in the West. I think there's a lot to be said for most of the core around Harden remaining intact, the team retaining some of those fringe guys, Daniel House and Austin Rivers, you know, not huge impact players, but important to the glue around Harden and the rest of the team. And as long as Westbrook and Harden can get on the same page early, I think that that's a team that is still a top two or three seed in the West, especially if they hit that over, as I think that they will. All right, that does it for the Southwest Division of the Western Conference, and we're going to go ahead and move our way through the rest of the divisions here. Again, one division per show, so we're looking forward to moving on to the next one. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Well, that's all we have for today. We'll be back with the next division here tomorrow. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon, and for Kyle Daugherty, this is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.